We're in Matthew chapter 15 tonight. If you want to turn over there, we'll be looking at a few things that Jesus taught. If you remember at the end of chapter 14, Jesus had traveled to the town of Gennesaret. And we talked a little bit about that town. It's on the northwest coast of the Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee is an interesting, it's got about four or five different names. It's called Lake Kinneret now, in modern times. In the Old Testament, it was called the Sea of Kinnereth. It's sometimes referred to as the Sea of Tiberias, sometimes as the Sea of Galilee, sometimes as the Sea of Gennesaret. And so this Gennesaret was one of the larger towns that was right on the coast of that, and it's really not a sea, it's a lake, as you look at the size of the thing. It's about 13 or less miles long and about 7 to 8 miles wide. So it's not exactly a huge oceanic type of a sea. But it's interesting that he was at that town. In verse 1 of chapter 15, we see that the Jews, some of them the scribes and Pharisees from Jerusalem, came all the way out there to Gennesaret to argue with him about something. Now, that's 60 miles. Now, of course, nowadays, if we wanted to argue with somebody 60 miles away, we just pick up the phone and call them and argue with them about something. Or if we really, really were mad about it and wanted to drive an hour, we could drive an hour. But in that day and age, to travel 60 miles was several days' journey. These men were so eager to go argue with Jesus and question him about this particular subject that they took more than a week of their time to go do it. Now you think, if you were going to take a week of your time to travel somewhere to ask them about something and to question them about something, that would have to be something that was pretty important, wouldn't it? So what did they go all that way to ask Jesus about and question him about? Well, verse 2 tells us, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders?" Now that sounds serious, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds like this is a criminal accusation here. And then they get, here it is. This is what they traveled all this way to find out and to argue about. "They didn't wash their hands when they ate bread." Can you imagine traveling 60 miles and taking a week to go ask somebody why somebody didn't wash their hands when they ate? But this was a big deal for them. I mean, they were serious about this. They want to know. This broke our tradition. Now, you know, a lot of us have a tradition of washing our hands at various different times during the day. And that's perfectly good and fine. But they have made a bigger deal out of this than it really is. We have to remember that traditions are just that. They're just traditions. They're habits. They're customs. And we shouldn't get them confused with God's laws. Some traditions may become a man's law in some areas. And certainly some of them may even be some necessary laws in man's world that we live in that they have to be there, and they're based on tradition, and it's okay. For example, which side of the road do we drive on? Well, we drive on the right side of the road. If you started driving on the left side of the road, you would cause a lot of problems for yourself and others if you didn't follow that tradition. And it's become a law now that you have to drive. You know, when they first started driving, it wasn't a law. It was just, you know, well, we've got to pass each other. And that became the way that it went. The one, you know, they passed right to the right. And so that then it became such a habit with everybody. Everybody got used to doing it that way that it became the custom, it became the tradition, and eventually then became the law. And now they paint the road lines and make the signs all for us to be on the right side of the road. But we understand that it's a tradition when we look across the ocean to England and see that they drive on the left side. And their laws are all, you better drive on the left side. And so obviously that's not something that has anything to do with what God doesn't care if we drive on the right side or the left side. It's just something that became a tradition, and then there were laws put in place for safety's sake. Well, the same thing with traffic signals. Red means stop, green means go. But it didn't have to be that way. When they first started making them, they could have made them some other colors. What if blue meant stop and red meant go? It could have. When they had started the whole thing, it could have been that way. And now we would think, you know, red meaning stop and green meaning go would be weird. But now we're used to it because it's been red and green. Well, washing hands is like that. It can be beneficial. You know, when you go to the restroom at a restaurant, there's signs there. Employees must wash their hands before returning to work. There's good reason for that. You wash your hands, you wash off germs, you're less likely to get infections. It can be a good thing. But it's not on the same plane with believe and be baptized in order to be saved. It's not equal with that. It's not equal with don't commit murder to wash your hands before you eat. It's not the same. You know, sometimes people get confused. I remember there was a movie. It was kind of a comedic thing, but I don't know how. It may have been based on some true facts for all I know. If some people get about that crazy about fashion, this woman killed this someone because she was wearing white shoes after Labor Day. You're not supposed to do that. So she killed her. So she was wearing white shoes after Labor Day. Well, you know, it was kind of a ridiculous scenario, but, well, maybe not. I don't know. Somebody might get that worked up over white shoes after Labor Day. But we think about things that people, they've blown this up into this great big thing, and it's really nothing more than a habit or a tradition. And people can do that in religion as well. And we've got to watch out for that happening to us. In fact, Jesus turns the tables on them in verse 3. Because Jesus had a much better question, a much more important question to ask them. You see, sometimes we get caught up in the insignificant and we miss what's truly significant. And that's what these men had done. They were so concerned about washing their hands before they ate that they were rejecting one of God's 10 commandments that He gave the Jews, that they were supposed to be following. They were ignoring it and not following it, but they were really upset about somebody washing their hands. And so Jesus asked them, why have you been breaking God's commandment to follow your tradition? Now, it wasn't the tradition of washing their hands that broke one of God's commandments, okay? It wasn't nothing sinful about washing your hands. I know you're glad to know that. But the fact of the matter was, they had a command, Jesus says, to honor their parents. Well, we know that one. That was one of the 10 commandments. And it is, in fact, said in the Old Testament that anyone who cursed their parents deserved to die the death. They were to be executed for it. And yet, He said, you're not keeping this command. What He told them was, and if we think about that command to honor parents, it's one of the few Old Testament commandments. I mean, there are thousands of commandments in the Old Testament. And only a few of them are actually brought forward and repeated in the New Testament. But honor your father and mother is one of the ones that's brought forward and repeated word for word in the New Testament in 2 places. So this indicates this was not just a side issue to God. This principle of honoring parents, it was way up there. And yet Jesus said these men were not following it. Verses 5 and 6 says what they would do is they would say, well, you know, I know I should take care of you, Mom, Dad, I should do that, but you know what? The money I was going to use for that, I've given it to God. It's a gift to God. It's a sacrifice. It's an offering to God. They called it Corban in the book of Mark, chapter 7 and verse 11. And this concept was that they would devote this to God. That seems very devout. It seems like, oh, these are really religious people. They're giving this money to God. But what they were really doing was violating God's command. God didn't command them to give that money to Him. He commanded them to take care of their parents, to honor their parents with it. And they were rejecting that and yet trying to look more religious. In fact, in the New Testament, the Bible says that one who does not care for his own is worse than an unbeliever. So this rejection of honoring their father and mother, rejection of caring for their family and members that were in need, was worse than if they just didn't believe in God at all, according to the New Testament. So while they were sitting there proclaiming their love and devotion for God with their mouths, in their action they were showing that they didn't truly love Him enough to keep this command that He had given them. We've got to be aware of that. It's easy to say, I love God. It's easy to say, God is a good God. He's wonderful, and I serve God. It's easy right now, anyway, for us to say that. There may come a time when it's not easy to even say that. But it's easy to say that. But it's much more difficult to live it, isn't it? See, Jesus calls them out on their hypocrisy in verse 7. He calls them hypocrites right to their faces. He doesn't just talk bad about them behind their backs to His disciples and say, can you believe what those guys are doing over there? You know, no, He comes right out and says, you hypocrites. He said, you're fakes and frauds. And then He quotes a prophecy from Isaiah that perfectly describes what these folks were doing. And it's a problem that people still today have. I know if we were to go out today and ask people around town, do you love God? You believe in God? Do you want to go to heaven? We ask them questions like that all over town, all over the parish. We find that most people would say, oh yeah, I believe in God. I love God. I love Jesus. Oh yeah, I want to go to heaven. We'd find that all over the place. A large percentage of people in every poll that's taken, you know, somewhere around 80% claim to be Christians. They claim to believe in Jesus and love Jesus. But the question is, are they living like it? It's something they claim that they love Him, but what are they doing? They're not acting like they love Him. Jesus said, if you love Me, keep My commandments. And several of His commandments, you know, several of the things He taught about morality and about human kindness and, you know, not lying but speaking the truth and things like that. And yet these very people who talk about they love Jesus and they mistreat their neighbor and cheat at work and, you know, cheat on their spouses and all the, you know, drunk all the time or using drugs or this, that, or the other. All these things that Jesus said, don't do this. And He said, if you love Me, keep these commandments. But that's still a problem today. It hasn't gone away. They talked a good talk. They may have sung a pretty song when they were at worship. They put on a good show. You know, when you bring a big old bag of money and drop it in at the treasury, you're putting on a good show. And they did that. And Jesus talked about that. Remember the widow's mite? Well, there they were. All these guys, they were coming in putting in big bags of money. And she came in, put in a couple pennies. And Jesus said she gave more than all the rest of them. They were putting on a good show, though. And a lot of people today do the same thing. They're out partying and living like the devil all week long, and the ones that aren't too hungover on Sunday morning show up for church and sing just as pretty as they can, and they all dressed up in their Sunday best and things like that all over the country. Well, I'm sure you've seen people do that way. Mm-hmm. They've done all sorts of wickedness all along the way, But they'll show up and sing a pretty song. Talk a good talk. Talk about how they love Jesus. How many in our world today talk about their love for God? 80% or more, we said they were Christians. Well, do you suppose 80% of the folks were at church today? I don't think so. They talk a good talk. Talk of their love for God, but they won't even come out to worship Him on the day of worship. What? Why not? How many people say one thing, but then live exactly the opposite of that? We have to be aware of that. It's such a common thing that if we're not careful, we can get caught up in that. We can live that way too if we aren't careful. We have to watch out. And how many who do worship God are doing it in vain because they're teaching men's doctrines instead of God's? In verse 9, Jesus, as He's talking to them about this situation, after He's quoted, He said, "These folks," He's quoted what Isaiah said, "they draw nigh unto Me with their lips, but their heart is far from Me." They say it, but their heart's not in it. How many folks are like that? We can run that danger if we're not careful. And we know people who are in that boat. And He goes on to say then, "But in vain they do worship Me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men." So how many even of those who may be very active in religious things, but they're doing the commandments of men instead of the commandments of God, and what good is it accomplishing for them then? And that's the other thing that these men were doing. They were very strict to follow their traditions, but they weren't following God's laws. We need to realize that traditions are not nearly as important as God's law. Well, then in verses 10 and 11, Jesus finally answers the question that the Pharisees brought. You remember that? You know, he kind of took it another direction. But remember, they had asked, "Well, what about washing their hands before they eat? They aren't doing that. Why don't you teach them to do right?" And so Jesus deals with this petty little issue. And He explains that spiritual cleanliness, not physical, not talking about germs or any diseases or things like that. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about physically getting sick from eating foods that spoiled or anything like that. That's not what we're talking about. He's talking about washing hands, and they're talking about spiritual cleanliness with God. And Jesus explains to them that spiritual cleanliness doesn't have anything to do with whether you got dirty hands when you eat food. It doesn't. Somebody out there working hard and somebody brings them a sandwich, why, they could get that sandwich and eat that sandwich and it wouldn't make them a sinner because they didn't wash their hands first. And that's what Jesus says. What He explains is that the things that defile a person from a spiritual standpoint come from the inside and come out of the mouth, not go into the mouth. That's the thing that causes the problem spiritually. Now, obviously Jesus was not ignorant of bacteria and viruses and things like that. He created those things. He created the whole world. He knew that people could get sick from eating bad food, or that germs could be passed. He understood that. But that's not what He's talking about. He's not talking about physical illness. He's talking about spiritual things. And spiritually, you know the old saying? Somebody probably say it's in Proverbs. Susan and I were talking earlier about people getting confused about what's in the Bible and what's not. You know, a lot of people think cleanliness is next to godliness is in the Bible. But God never said that physical cleanliness makes you a more godly person. Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong to take a bath and use soap and be clean. We're glad if we're going to be around each other that we do those things. But that's not what makes you right in God's eyes. Well, there are some people who physically are very well groomed, more better groomed than any of us, probably. Oh, they're immaculately groomed. Everything's perfect, and they're perfectly clean physically. But they're full of sin in their life, and they're a disaster spiritually. And that's what Jesus is talking about, the spiritual nature of things. Kind of wonder, you know, we just talked about the feeding of the 5,000. I wonder if Jesus had the disciples wash their hands before they served that food. Guess not. Maybe that's why the Pharisees were so upset and followed him all the way over there to question him about it. Now the disciples come to Jesus and they want to know if he realizes that what he said upset them. It offended them. I guess their society wasn't that much different than our society. People get offended when you say something. It hurts their feelings. Now, we don't need to go out of our way to hurt people's feelings, and we shouldn't just intentionally try to hurt people's feelings. But the fact of the matter is, the truth is the truth. You can try to sidestep it and duck it and dodge it and beat around the bush and all that, but the truth still remains the truth. And Jesus just didn't bother with any of that. He just told them, "You're hypocrites. You're breaking God's law to keep your own traditions." They didn't like that. Well, I guess not. How many of us would like it if Jesus pointed out the sin in our life? Well, we all know we have sin. We're all sinners. We all commit sin. We all know that. But how would we like to have it publicly pointed out in front of a crowd? Well, we wouldn't like that at all, would we? Well, these Pharisees didn't like that either. They didn't like having it pointed out in front of everybody that they were hypocrites. And so they were upset. They were offended. They were angry at him. You know, sometimes we need to learn to be more like Jesus and speak the truth, even if it does hurt some feelings. There will be many people on the day of judgment who will be lost because no one ever told them the truth for fear of hurting their feelings. They were so afraid that they might offend them that they never told them the truth. And so that person continued to live a life of sin and never repented of it. Now, there are some people who, even if you told them the truth, they still wouldn't repent of the sin. That's certainly the case. And the Pharisees were part of that group. They weren't going to repent, even though Jesus pointed out their sin. But he still had to do his part to tell them that the way they were living was leading them to destruction and not to salvation. You know, we're kind of in that situation in our society. It's so obsessed with people being offended that it's getting to the point where it's hard to take a breath without offending somebody. Somebody's going to get offended at you just because you breathe air. Guess we'll have to all stop breathing eventually. After that, few hours of nobody breathing, nobody will get offended anymore, ever, if we do that. But you know, God created us with certain rights. You know, the Declaration of Independence talks about some of those inalienable rights, the right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness and those kind of things. But you know, God never gave us the right to have the freedom of having our feelings hurt. That's not a right. We don't have the right to not be offended by anything in the world. We're going to have to just face the fact that there are things in this world that people do and say that are going to offend us. They are. We don't want to be offended. We don't like to be offended. But people are going to say things that will hurt our feelings. We have to learn to deal with that. We're going to say things that hurt other people's feelings. They're going to have to learn how to deal with that. We're going to have to learn how to get along anyway. Even though we sometimes do and say things that hurt each other's feelings, we have to get beyond that and do what we have to do to be pleasing to God, regardless of those things. Well, Jesus knew that already, of course. And Jesus tells the disciples that God is going to root up any plants that are not His. Anything God didn't plant in His garden, He's going to weed it out. He's going to root them up. Any good gardener would, wouldn't he? He's not going to let the weeds stay. He's going to get rid of the weeds. But Jesus, we notice in verse 14, does not give the disciples the task of doing the rooting up. Sometimes we'd like to be the weed pullers in the world. We'd like to get rid of the folks that are the problem causers, and you know, we get rid of them. But that's not our job. In fact, Jesus tells the disciples, and regarding the Pharisees, he's basically said, God's going to take care of them. He's going to root them up. He's going to pull those weeds out of the garden. But then he goes on to tell the disciples, let them alone. He says, it's not your job to worry about. Just let them alone. They're blind leaders of the blind, and if the blind lead the blind, they'll all fall in the ditch. So just let it go. You know, at some point in our lives, hopefully, we need to learn anyway, whether we will or not, but we'll have a better life if we will learn it. At some point, we need to learn that we can't control everybody else in the world. When we learn that, we'll live a happier life. When we realize that we can't make everybody else do what's right. We can't make everybody else think what's right. And when we realize that, we'll realize what Jesus means here. Just let them alone. There are some people that you can talk to and you can discuss things with them and you can persuade them and convince them of things. And they'll change their mind and they'll change their actions. And there are other people that you might as well bang your head up against a brick wall because you're never going to get through to them. And Jesus knew that about the Pharisees. Now, we don't always know who it is. Jesus knew. You know, he could see into the hearts and minds of people and he had it all figured out. We don't. But he knew. Don't waste your time with the Pharisees. And that's the advice he gave to the disciples. Just leave them alone. That doesn't mean that we don't still stand up for the truth, that we don't still say what's right and teach the truth, but we just realize that there are always going to be some people that reject that and won't have anything to do with it. There always will. As we look then down to verse 15, Peter asked him to declare this parable to us. Tell us what this one's about. What did you mean by that you were saying about this unclean and clean? And so Jesus does in verse 16 and following. He's a little stunned. He's like, a little disappointed too. You mean you don't understand? All this time he's been teaching them, and yet so many times they still don't have a clue what he's talking about. But he goes on and explains it. He says, don't you understand that what enters at the mouth goes into the belly and then it goes out in the waste? It's disposed of. It's eliminated. That's the way that works. We understand that process. It's been going on since the time we were born. We understand how that works. You eat it, it goes into your stomach. It's supposed to anyway. If it goes anywhere besides your stomach, you got problems. And in fact, Mark in chapter 7 specifies that what you eat, whatever goes in your mouth, goes to your stomach, not to your heart. We'd be in trouble if it went to our heart instead of our stomach. Now, I know eventually the nutrients get in the blood and gets pumped by the heart and all that, but that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about, you know, the food just passes through the physical body. And when he says the heart there even, he's not talking about your heart that pumps the blood anyway. He's talking about the center of a human being. The spirit, the soul, the part that makes us humans. And so, he goes on to say then, in verse 18, the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and that's what defiles a man. It's all about spiritual versus physical. The physical food that we eat cannot affect our spirit because it goes through our physical body. It never contacts our spirit. And it's not spiritual food. It doesn't affect that part. But Jesus says, the spiritual can and does affect the physical. You see, that's an amazing thing. The physical can't affect the spiritual, but the spiritual does control the physical. You see, we get confused sometimes. Sometimes we think that we are a human body, and we just, you know, that's me, this is me, and I have a spirit that lives in here. Sometimes that's the way we think of it. But the fact of the matter is that God reveals to us through the Scriptures that the truth is, I'm a spiritual being, and I'm just living in this body. That's the same thing with our houses. We don't say, well, the house is me, and my body just lives in the house. No, we know I'm me, and the house is just where I live. Same thing spiritually speaking. I am a spiritual being created in the image of God. God didn't have a physical body, but He chose to put human beings, us, in physical bodies. And because of that, we have control over the physical body. We're supposed to control it. We don't let it control us. And yet, because people are so confused about that, so many times, they allow their physical appetites and desires to control their spiritual nature. And that shouldn't be the case. The spiritual is supposed to control the physical, not the other way around. And when it comes to the actual eating of food, that's the case. You can eat something that has been poisoned, and it may kill the physical body, but it won't destroy your soul. It can't. It doesn't have that power. And we need to understand that, because when we understand that, it changes the way we think about how we live in this world. But he explains that the bad things that defile somebody are the things that come out of their heart. They're the things that come, he talks about, it starts with evil thoughts. And then it proceeds from the evil thoughts, then into words and actions. And he talks about some different ones there. He mentions false witness and blasphemy, adultery and murder and fornication and theft. See, those aren't things that come at you from the outside. Those are things that come from within. And he says in verse 20 then, these are the things that defile somebody. See, these are the things that will cost someone their soul. Living with these sinful thoughts, actions, and words, these are the things that will cause you to lose your soul and be lost eternally. But eating without washing your hands, there won't be anybody that's lost and suffering in hell for all eternity just because they forgot to wash their hands before they ate. That's just not the way it works. And so, we need to do our best to keep in mind always that the spiritual is infinitely more important than the physical. Jesus didn't say, what is it profited a man if he gains the whole world and loses his life? That's not what he said. He said, what is it profited a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Your physical life, even if you lose it, it wasn't that valuable. Well, now I know we all think our life's pretty valuable. But it's not nearly as valuable as our eternal life, our eternal soul. But we need to put the focus where it ought to be. Instead of obsessing over the physical, we need to be considering the spiritual. That's what's going to make the determination of whether we get into heaven or not. Jesus tried to teach the disciples that. He tried to tell the Pharisees that, but they weren't getting it. The disciples did get it. Let's be sure that we're like the disciples, and we get it. And we live based accordingly live based on that knowledge that the physical is not in control. The spiritual is the thing that we have to control, and that has to then control the physical. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation tonight, perhaps you've allowed sin into your life. That sin is like a poison that eats away at your spiritual being and will ultimately destroy it in the day of judgment if you don't get the antidote. Jesus Christ and His blood are the antidote for sin. If you need that antidote, take care of it tonight before it's too late. If you need to respond for any reason, do so now as we stand and sing.